Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, and welcome to Concussion Talk Podcast. I'm Nick Mercer. This is episode 165. I'm with Isabel Whitcomb, and they are a writer for Slate, or are you a freelance writer?
I'm a freelance writer, but I've contributed to Slate frequently.
Slate, New York Times, and who else? Slate, New York Times, and others?
Yeah.
Okay, but we want to talk about the article they wrote for New York Times called How He Got Concussions So Wrong. And they talk about Concussion Alliance, which with Connor Gormley.
Yeah. And the article was for Slate, not
the article. The article was for Slate, yes. But before that, I guess I'll just do a brief little ad thing if they're still sponsoring, but we'll see. Head Check Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple and powerful technology. To organizations like the Canadian Football League, Track Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, rely on Head Check to improve communication and optimize care. Visit headcheckhealth.com for more. And hope that covered it all. But now we've got Isabel, and so it was Slate. Eric will be in the link in the description, the podcast description. So don't worry about that, but read it because it's a great article. And not only did they interview Connor Gormley and his mother, but they also had a concussion last summer.
Memorial Day.
And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about. So your experience with your concussion, and basically, and it's you can read the article, but still hear your voice on it. And so what happened then? How'd you get the concussion?
Yeah, so I've played pickup soccer for years now. Very casual games, but I was out on Memorial Day weekend and was defending the goal and happened to be looking at I don't know what, but not in the direction of the ball when another player tried to score a goal and kicked the ball at my head from very close, like maybe five or 10 feet away. Oh. And it was a strong guy. So it hit me in the head very hard. I didn't really know what was happening at the time. Like things like this happen all the time where it kind of seems to occur in slow motion. But I remember, my sunglasses being 20 feet away from me on the field and were just like broken into pieces, and my friends, getting up and giving them to me. I had a physical therapist on my soccer team, and she came up to me and said, hey, like, you know, let me know if you want me to check you out. And I said, you know, I think I'm good to keep playing.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of.
You weren't knocked out at all, were you?
No, I wasn't knocked out. I thought I was good to keep playing. I felt a little stunned, but honestly, it just like was really surprising. So yeah. I thought I was stunned from surprised. Kept playing and felt very disoriented. So my depth perception felt kind of off. It just kind of felt like things were all happening from far away. But
you mentioned in your article that everything appeared 2D almost. 2D? Is that
exactly.
The easy way to write about it, or is it kind of what I felt like that comic strip kind of?
Yeah, it exactly. Like it was hard because my depth perception felt all wrong. It just kind of just felt like everything was happening far away, like in two dimensions, exactly, like a comic strip.
Wow.
Felt very removed from everything. So I walked off of the field, sat on the sidelines, put a baseball cap over my eyes because everything felt very, very bright, and just hung out there.
Yeah.
And then you
went home, and the next day you finally felt, well, I should, before I finished asking the bell questions, I should mention their face does not really look this red. This because of the red drapes of your window. And so it's just, you know, that. But yeah, that was a little influence there. But so when did you start realizing that wasn't just be feeling a bit shocked and stunned by the event when you went home and you slept or before?
Well, actually, so my friend on the soccer team, who's a physical therapist, came off to check me out. She did the classic like finger tracking test where just like follow my finger.
Yeah.
And I just really couldn't do it. At the time it didn't even occur to me that that was something that you should be able to do, like this. And just my eyes just kept jumping from side to side. Yeah. So she said, you know, you're definitely concussed. You know, it might take you a couple days to get over it. And I remember telling her, saying, oh, can I go for a run tomorrow? And she was like, see how you feel. So I went home, slept. Honestly, like I had known people who have had concussions before, but they've always, like gotten better pretty quickly. I had never talked to anyone in depth about their concussion experience. So I wasn't really freaked out. I just, you know, was like, okay, I'm just going to take it easy for a couple days. It wasn't until Monday that things kind of started to go south for me.
This happened on a Saturday or a Sunday?
This happened on a Saturday, yeah. Well, I guess Tuesday, because it was Memorial Day weekend. So after the long weekend, I kind of chilled out that weekend, but I did go out and do some things with friends. I just happened to sleep a lot. I tried to stay off my phone. And on Tuesday, I was actually thinking, you know, I could probably do a light work day. Like maybe I'll just do a few hours. And I called up my doctor, and this was the first time I'd like really talked to a medical professional. And they said, you know, you need to be, in bed. You should draw the blinds. You really shouldn't be doing anything beyond lying down and resting. And they told me that, you know, if you do too much, you'll risk getting post-concussion syndrome, which through my research I found out is not really a term like specialists are using anymore. So that really, really freaked me out, and I went to bed and rested, and I pretty much didn't stop resting for another 6 or 7 weeks.
Wow. So, you don't work necessarily work as you did. My question really is, did you have an office to go to, or is it just work from home?
I normally work from home.
Okay. But is there an office that you may go to that would?
No. Yep. I just work from home.
and find out. What was it, the 6 weeks or six, 8 weeks that you rested, that you realized that there's like, obviously something wrong with you or something, but there's a there's a story here. There's something I want to write on day four. I want to write about it. I want to, if you don't know enough about this, or I don't know enough about this.
As a writer, I would say when people ask me where I get my story ideas, I basically just mine my life for story ideas. That's honestly the main way that I come up with the things I want to write about. So even though I didn't know what the story would be, pretty soon after I got a concussion, I was thinking, how do I write about this? So pretty quickly, I realized I wanted to write about concussions, but it wasn't until 3 or 4 weeks into the experience that what the story would be kind of started to coalesce in my mind. So what was happening about a month in is I was growing increasingly frustrated because I had initially been told that this would be a 5-day recovery, and then a 10-day recovery, and then a 2-week recovery, and then a 4-week recovery. And with each of these I started to get more and more hopeless. And then after 1 month, the kind of milestone you get told is 3 months, which is terrifying. And so at that point, I started to get really I was getting very scared. And that's when I started doing some of my own research. And this is where I should give credit to another science writer, Tova Danovich, who wrote an article for The Atlantic about her own concussion experience.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Yeah. So I am part of a Slack channel for science writers. Right. And I have a lot of other friends through that Slack channel, and Tova is one of them. And even though I had been mostly avoiding screens, I'd been periodically going on Slack and asking for advice and kind of posting a little bit about what was going on to update my colleagues. And Tova reached out to me and said, I had a concussion about a year ago, and I learned the hard way that rest really doesn't work for some people. That's enough for some people, but for many people, it requires more active intervention. This was honestly 2 weeks into my recovery, and I kind of brushed it off at first. I kind of wanted to keep following my doctor's advice because I figured, my doctor's the one with the medical degree. I'm going to listen to them. They'll tell me if I need to do something more.
Yeah.
Then a month in, I started to get very frustrated and doubt the kind of advice that I was getting from medical professionals. So I started looking into the resources that Tova had sent me, which included, she mentioned she had seen a vestibular physical therapist, and dizziness was something I was dealing with big time.
Yeah.
So I found a vestibular therapist myself, and was simultaneously listening to podcasts about concussions, not reading much articles. I couldn't really read. But was kind of starting to piece it together that this rest thing was very bad advice. When I got this physical therapist on the phone, she told me, your instincts are right. You need to be getting up and moving. I'm really glad you called me. Wish you had come in earlier. And so that was the point. That was about 5 or 6 weeks into my concussion. And that was the point when I realized, this is the story. This advice led me very badly astray in my recovery.
So what thing was the most, I know you ran into, so you called up or you connected with Connor, but what was your, how did you start investigating this scenario and what are the important facts you learned, information you learned from just doing research with this?
So I didn't really start doing at first, the research that I was doing was honestly just talking to my physical therapist. I should mention that probably the biggest debilitating symptom that I had is that I really couldn't read. My eyes were jumping.
As a writer, that hurts.
Yeah, yeah. The words on a page felt very jumbled. Like if you imagine like an alphabet soup, but of words, I could focus on one individual word, but I couldn't string them together. So it would be like,
Anyone listening sees something or jumping their head like right to left or left or left or right. I see.
Yeah. So it was very, very slow process that would give me a very bad headache. And I'm a freelance writer, which means that I am making my money off of contracts to write individual stories. So I couldn't make money, basically. So that's a sidebar. I couldn't read, so I wasn't really doing research at this time. But by mid-August, I was mostly recovered. I was just experiencing periodic flare-ups at that point. So I was back to work like three-quarter time. And that's when I spoke to my editor at Slate about this experience. And she was immediately interested in me writing an article about this. And that's when I started reaching out to experts. And the kind of the line of questioning that I started out with when I began talking with experts such as Henrique Zetterberg in Sweden, Fatima Nasrallah at Queensland Brain Institute, was, hey, this was my experience with a concussion. Like, is this common?
Yeah.
And my mind was really blown when these experts said again and again, yeah, this experience is very common, and it's really a shame how many people are having your experience of being told you need to go lie down and rest. It was Henrique Zetterberg who told me, you know, that probably actively made your recovery much longer and much worse.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really just amazing. Not too bad / amazing that, I mean, I've been doing this podcast since 2015, and the awareness has, I mean, some of the science obviously has changed, and the awareness has improved a bit, but still, this injury, your concussion was in 2023, September, July, or whatever?
May, and I probably, right, May, I was 100% better by
Memorial Day weekend, right, yeah. So less than a year ago, and it's not out there for the common knowledge of what to do, but the very, something that happens all the time. It's not like it's a rare occurrence. People get concussed all the time. So I think it's great that you actually got out there and researched and put it out there to the public, who hopefully will digest all of this information. But what would you say was the most valuable information that you learned from either your physio or from Connor or his mother or somebody else, or Henrique or Father Allah? Somebody.
Something that I learned that was fascinating.
Something, but yeah, some general, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I am a real nerd about neuroscience. I didn't study neuroscience in college, but it's something that I've written about a lot, particularly pain. I'm very interested in the way that our brain interprets the messages that our body gets from the world. So because I'm kind of a nerd about this stuff, it's not enough for me to say, oh, this is a normal experience. I want to know what is actually going on in my brain. So that was my next line of questioning. And what I found is that a concussion is not a bruise. That might be obvious to many of your listeners, but because I had been told over and over again, it's like a bruise to the brain, I took that quite literally. And what I found is that actually a concussion is it's a rotational force oftentimes on your actual nerves in your brain. So your neurons. And these are like long kind of cord shaped cells. And the when they the cord and it the long part is called an axon, and when the axon twists, as it does during a concussion, it kind of frays, and it makes it very difficult for messages to get across these nerves. Yeah. And basically, this kind of creates a haywire communication in your brain. So the different regions of your brain kind of stop communicating properly. So like a manifestation of this might be that I am looking at my screen and I am seeing words, but I do not really understand what the words mean together. So kind of, and this is my very crude non-neuroscientist understanding, but the part of my brain that is looking is not really talking to the part of my brain that is like interpreting information. Yeah.
I really like what you wrote about the I thought it was great. It was a with I think Enrique was the one who gave you the analogy. What was the traffic jam or the road work? Not traffic jam, but road work. So just want to explain that to people who have not ignorantly read your awesome article. So we get people reading the article too now. But yes, but could you please just tell me what Enrique and you wrote about the roadworks and traffic and how that applies to your brain and the sharing of axons.
Yeah, so because the regions of your brain aren't talking to each other properly and the axons are not able to send it or transmit information, it ends up acting a little bit like a traffic jam, right? But what I found is that that doesn't mean you have to wait for the axons to heal to actually feel better. So axons and neurons take a really, really long time to heal. They're actually very, very bad at repairing themselves. But that doesn't mean it has to take that long to heal from a concussion. Your brain is remarkably plastic. And when people talk about the brain being plastic, what that actually means is when parts of it like die or get broken, like in a concussion, it can just find new ways to do the same things or send the same information. So during a traffic jam, you know, if there's road work happening, you're not going to just sit there in traffic for weeks until the road work is done. Yeah. Usually you'll get redirected down a different route. And so the same thing happens in your brain where those axons are, you know, out of commission for a while, but your brain can find new neurons to send the same messages. And that recalibration period is really tough and is very, very tiring, which is why you feel so crappy during a concussion. But the thing is that in order to form these new connections, you need to actually be engaging in like your normal activities, not at your, you know, regular levels. It needs to be like very, very moderate level to like acclimate yourself. But lying in bed, as I was doing in a dark room, is not engaging those new networks in your brain or new pathways in your brain. And so you can't really train yourself to like create these new ways of sending information.
Great. So when did you start to decide that as you get back about running in or walking or whatever, when did you engage in activity for your new, for say your physio told you to do that?
I had the conversation with the physical therapist at the beginning of July. So this was 5 weeks in. And she actually didn't make me wait until I went into the office. We had a quick consultation. She said, yes, I'm going to be able to help you. And she said, the first thing, I want to make sure that you are doing the right things on your own before you even come into my office. So she said, I want you to make sure that you are getting out and like either power walking or jogging for 20 minutes a day. She said, this is your homework right now. And she said, push yourself to the point where, you know, if your symptoms are on a scale of 1 to 10, they are 2 points higher than baseline. So yeah, if I wake up in the morning and my symptoms are a 3 out of 10, She wanted me power walking or jogging for 20 minutes up to like a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
And that was completely new information. So I started doing that. And then when I went in to see her, she got me on the treadmill and started taking my heart rate, and had me exercising at a particular heart rate at that point. And we kind of just kept ramping up the jogging after that.
And how did you feel when she said pick up to 5 or even higher? How did you feel physically? Did you feel like, oh, this is I'm getting winded, or I'm getting my leg also tired, I'm really tired now? Or did you feel, oh, I can do this, this is nothing, this is just, I shouldn't do this a lot more?
Yeah. Well, I should mention that I'm a trail runner. So my body was craving it. It made me, how it would make me feel is either very fatigued, or my head would feel a little fuzzy, or I might get a slightly worse headache. I obviously didn't push it past that point. Okay. Like, there were days where maybe I didn't get very good sleep the night before. Yeah. And I just couldn't do as much, and that was fine. But for me, even though my symptoms were getting a little bit worse, the feeling of, the confidence of knowing I was doing something that was going to help, and the confidence that my physical therapist had in me that this was going to help me get better, it felt way better than sitting at home just waiting around. Yeah. Yeah, also, but something that I've heard is common for probably for everyone, but athletes in particular, I'm used to being on a training regimen.
Yeah.
I'm used to pushing through a certain level of discomfort to like achieve the results that I want. And it felt good to have a program to be like, yes, this is like my physical therapist is like my coach. And I am like doing the steps that she's telling me to do. And it was incredibly satisfying to me, kind of see things change, even though it was.
So there was a bit of discomfort at first when you started it, because you felt like, was it your body or your brain, like inside? And you said, yeah, headache.
Yeah, it was my brain. And it would be, like I said, either headaches, often dizzy. So at first I was not running for more than like 30 seconds at a time because the dizziness would be quite intense. But a lot of the time this looked like very fast walking with like a little bit of like jogging here and there. And over time I was able to increase the amount of time that I was jogging until I was doing almost the whole 20 minutes.
And how long would you be before your breaking, even now? It's last year after, but what is your distance? Are you a 10K run or a marathon or?
I'm training for a 50K right now. I ran a 20-mile race 3 weeks ago. So I'm back. But I think I was getting back to a pretty normal level of training by like October, I would say.
But how do you feel? How does your body feel? Body, brain, the whole thing. Like, how does that feel? Does it feel any different than, say, when you were in training in April as compared to training in like October? Or does it feel, is there a difference?
So there's no difference in terms of running. I feel amazing when I run. I would say pretty much I feel almost all the way back to normal. The one change that I suspect is due to my concussion is I used to have no issues sleeping ever. I was one of those people that I would like lay down and be asleep before I could even like pick up a book. And I deal with pretty annoying insomnia these days. And that's completely new for me. That started last summer. And it's something that I'm actively still trying to deal with. And occasional headaches, which again, I was never a headache person before. Yeah. But in terms of those are like the two remaining things. The insomnia is the one that like still, I would say impacts my quality of life. But during the day, I'm usually like, very, I'm back to my normal amount of work. I am probably in better shape than I was before my concussion. So,
hence
yeah, I'm
very grateful that. Hence the 50K you're doing. So when is that?
Not until October. I literally just signed up for it.
Yeah, well, where you're in Portland, right?
Yes.
So where I mean, I was in Portland in 2018, a few days, buddy of mine, Steve. So hi, Steve. So where's the fifth race? Is it in Oregon or is it in?
It's in Oregon. It's along the Rogue River Gorge. So there's this beautiful section of the Rogue River that goes through almost these like canyons of rock, which is right next to Crater Lake.
Toward Idaho, kind of? Is it toward Idaho?
No, it's right next to Crater Lake National Park, which is in southern Oregon.
Okay. Oh, geez. Cool. But so how is your reading now?
My reading is totally fine. Like I said, sometimes when I spend a lot of time on screens, I do get a headache, which I didn't used to get. Yeah. It's interesting though.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There are that and the insomnia. I sometimes suspect it has to do with the concussion, but it's very hard to tell sometimes whether something is just your body doing new things or because of a particular experience. So I'm not totally sure. You know, when I interviewed scientists, so there are many studies that show that over half of concussion patients are still having a couple symptoms, like, you know, 6 months, a year down the road. But the major problem with interpreting these studies is a lot of people, you know, some of those symptoms might not actually be because of the concussion.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I'm experiencing, where I'm like, maybe I'm almost 30. Like, maybe insomnia is just a new thing for me. Maybe it's because I hit my head.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Don't be turning 30. I'm gonna speak your reading. So there, yeah. Did that just reading? That's what I was trying to think of. But did we said the word is to be jumbled?
Yeah, the words
and
would be
really kind of stop being jumbled all of a sudden, or did that happen? Or?
Yeah, jumble. Okay, so that's the best way that I can describe it, but it's more like I can only read one word at a time.
Okay,
and instead of like,
normal, like what word you're before, kind of,
yeah, like
where it goes,
you focus on one word and then find the next word and focus on it and then like try and string them together.
Yeah.
And my physical therapist suspected that this was an eye tracking issue. So a problem that many people who experience concussions have is your eyes stop being able to coordinate properly.
Okay, did you hear that, Karen? I heard that from I do the sanitization thing for the University Medical Center here. Do for the medical center.
Yeah.
When your eyes are a bit, well, I have dilution, so I'm kind of, I've had dilution for 21 years now, but my eyes don't get as much, but that's the thing, your eyes kind of just move back and forth, don't stay steady.
Yeah. So normally, your eyes are actually each taking an individual picture and your brain is combining those pictures into one.
Yeah.
And some people, when they have a concussion, their eyes are not really moving in unison, or so it's just very taxing for your brain to like put together those two images. So other than the running, something my physical therapist and I were really working on were eye tracking exercises. So these can look very odd. My roommates and I were laughing a lot about them because I'd be standing in the living room, like with a ball on a string, and I'd be like standing on one foot and swinging the ball from side to side and, tracking it with my eyes. Sometimes I would have to do like word association or walking backwards just so, I'd be engaging different parts of my brain at the same time. And they're funny, very funny looking exercises, but they really, really helped.
But the word when you're reading, so that just kind of helped us kind of fix itself spontaneously, or was it like a gradual process?
It was very gradual. Yeah. Pretty much as soon as I started physical therapy, other than the jogging, I started going back to work. And that was honestly the hardest transition for me, like much, much harder than the jogging every day. And I could only handle like 30 minutes at a time, like maybe 2 30-minute increments of work, which literally was just like checking my email. Over time, so basically it was the same rule as with running, where if it was okay if my symptoms went up like 2 points from baseline, but not more than that.
Yeah.
And if, I woke up the next day and felt back to normal and felt okay after all of that, I could increase the amount of time that I was working. So by the end of July, I had been doing physical therapy for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I think I was working for like 4 hours a day, broken up into like hour long increments. And it felt like a lot, but it was very satisfying, to be back at that point.
I'll bet. So you're back working now full time or part time, or how much you feel you can.
I would say only in the last month am I doing about the same amount of work that I was doing before my concussion. Even up until recently, I would say I was doing like 80% of the amount that I was doing. So because I set my own hours, I don't really have like full time or part time, but for a long time I was only working like 5 or 6 hours a day. And now I would say I'm back to doing like between 6 to 8, which as a freelancer is like pretty normal for me.
So what are the science-based, what are you working on now?
Working on so many projects. I'm actually really? In the busiest period right now since last summer. I am kind of starting my next piece about chronic pain and chronic pain science and treatment, which is something that I've reported on a lot over the years. I'm working on a lot of environmental pieces. So when I'm not a health journalist, I write about environmental issues. So I'm working on a piece about owls, and another piece about mushrooms. What else am I working on? Oh, I'm working on a crazy story about the big earthquake that is going to hit the Pacific Northwest at some point. when's the earthquake?
Yeah, when's that going to be?
30% chance of happening in the next I want to say 30 years. Don't Ooh. Quote me on that statistic, but it's, you know, I'm planning on staying in Portland. There's like a decent chance that I'll experience.
Hopefully not when you're running.
Yeah.
Hopefully not the gorge ever for the,
yeah.
The gorge. That's what I think of the gorge. I was thinking of that's near Idaho, right?
So
gorge or the something.
There is a gorge near Idaho. I've never been there though. You so know, Portland is on the Columbia Gorge, which is a different one. But also
that's why I'm thinking of. I don't know. I'm East Coast Canada, so
I'm
driving down from Vancouver through Seattle and Portland and stuff. So on the highway, on the coastal highway. But yeah. So are you shopping around those articles, those works?
No, they have homes already. I'm writing for a bunch of different places.
I won't reach out if I can, but I don't so won't say, but because they've already been bought. Is that how it works?
Yes.
I'm about to ask you about this stuff, about your, again, it's one of how freelance stuff works, but you just kind of like have an idea and you approach, do you have an idea and you approach?
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. So I have clients that approach me, you know, with their stories that they want to run and say, hey, do you want to write a story on this particular topic? And I'll say, sure, and take that on. With a lot of these stories I'm working on now, they were ideas that I've been brewing for a really long time. I do a lot of the initial research on my own time, put together essentially what is called a pitch, which is usually like, I want to say like 4 or 5 paragraphs outlining like all the research I've done, send it off to whatever editor I think will like it. And sometimes usually it involves like at least one rejection in my experience.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah.
All of these stories I'm working on rejected at least one time.
Yeah.
And then hopefully you find someone who wants to give you the go ahead.
Nice. Well, so
yeah.
So Slate took this one on. Or they asked you to write this one, or you mentioned they kind of, you said the editor site kind of said, we want you to write out this, or?
With Slate, I have a, like, I've had a relationship with them for 3 or 4 years now. And one particular editor and I bounce around ideas all the time in more of a casual way. So I actually got her on the phone and we just talked about my experience and I kind of shared the kinds of things that I'd want to write about. And she gave me the go ahead to write about this experience based on a phone call.
Yeah, you're kind of like, I don't through this discussion, how it's terrible, blah, blah, blah. Not to talk down about it, but, you know, and it's just like, and she was like, oh, that sounds like an interesting article. So write that up.
Yeah, exactly.
And you reached out to a lot of people like from Sweden to Australia, and anyone near in Portland or on the that you talked to in California or BC.
I talked to some folks in San Francisco. They didn't make it into the final article, but those conversations were very informative. I will say there's so many things that I learned while researching this article that I really couldn't fit into the final draft, which made it very, very hard to write, actually, because it was there was so much good information and I really had to distill it down into one narrative. Otherwise, it would have been incoherent, but there's a lot of other interesting stuff. I would say like the one area that I really didn't get a chance to write about at all is the new research that's happening on concussion imaging and biomarker testing.
So what'd you find out about that quickly?
So right now, one of the tricky things about concussions is that you can't see them on a CT scan or an MRI, which oftentimes when you get hit in the head, especially if you pass out, you'll get sent to go get a CT scan or an MRI, and that's important.
People want proof that they've done something. Yeah,
exactly. And it's also important to rule out something even more serious, an aneurysm or something. But the problem is if you have a concussion, nothing will show up on those imaging. And it that can be really frustrating because it's like, hey, I feel terrible. And this doctor is telling me I'm fine. But there are imaging techniques that Fatima Nasrallah is one of the scientists who's doing a ton of great work on this, that can detect changes in the brain that occur during a concussion. And this isn't being used in routine clinical use, but in the future we might be able to diagnose concussions based on these imaging techniques. And similarly, one of the reasons that this could be really important is there are many, many different manifestations of concussions. So some people are very dizzy, some people have issues with their eye tracking. And in the future, we might be able to diagnose the specific type of concussion that someone has and prescribe a more tailored kind of care for someone based on what changes have occurred in the brain.
Yeah, because actually I interviewed on this podcast, but what is this, 2022 or 21, I forget when, but Dr. Alan Pierce from is a colleague of Dr. Nasrallah, and he was talking about that the device and the potential that device, that imaging, that could work. But one of the points you made reading about how there's a lot of good information that couldn't make it in, and there's so much different information and good information that was, but it's all, one of my big pet peeves about brain drain concussion is that it's so, all the information is so disparate. There's not one center for say, like cancer has in Canada and the US have their own big, they're bigger organizations that are just championing cancer research. But where concussion symptoms are so different that there's never one place. Because everyone wants I do my own blog and my own podcast, and other people want to do their own blog, their own podcast, their own organization, because they have different symptoms. They can't relate to me and I can't relate to them. And so it's a whole, if there's one body that was saying, okay, brain injury, concussion, this is important research in this area, we need money. And then they get a lot of money, but there's so many small organizations, they can't get enough money, because why give it to one small organization when they can't do anything with it? Give it to the hospitals and research centers. But that's just my take from doing this for a while now.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned cancer, because with cancer we can identify many, many different types, and the treatment is not the same between types. Many, many different types of treatment, and even today therapy is highly individualized, and that's one of the major advances that we're making in cancer care. Obviously, a concussion is not deadly in the same way as cancer, but at the same time, in the future, similarly, we might have many different subtypes of concussion, much more tailored, individualized care that takes into account the specific changes that are occurring in a person's brain, and also the manifestations of their concussion.
Right. No, I think that's an excellent point, because there's so much. You said so many subtypes of concussion, so many different symptoms they can arise. I never had a concussion per se. I had a coma. I was in a coma, but I mean, I experienced a lot of the symptoms that I've heard people with concussions have discussed. I experienced kind of more intensely and more permanently, I guess. But still, they're just, it seems like, to me, it seems, because I guess as I kind of got the gamut, except for headaches, right? I didn't really get headaches, except for when I had a brain fog together, but my head, but it seems like there should be one organization that can really, really, or one nationally, well, I see one in the States, one in Canada, different ones, different countries, different health systems. There's gotta be organizations that can really put this together. Put together, like, I know Australia seems to have a good, they started off with the, I don't know, the brain bank, but like the more rate, the more they're, they seem to have been more together, more, well, I could be wrong now. I'm not from Australia, I've never been there, but I mean, when I've talked, what I've heard about, I've heard about like people who are kind of closely related, the colleagues or like the brain bank and like different University of Queensland and Melbourne and Sydney, like different organizations and different medical centers that are kind of combined, kind of closely work together, kind of more than we have in North America. But I could be wrong, but who knows? Yeah. So, is there anything I'm surprised we could? Because I mean, the free Zoom now. So I'm surprised we got this long. Be out getting cough. Does it? And usually it's a timer. It's like
Yeah, that's so
5 minutes. And
interesting.
I haven't seen it yet. And we've been talking
Yeah.
for a while. So, yeah, for a while. So, anyway, is there anything you want to leave the listeners with about your? Where can they can roast you? The website, the link I'll post in the description of the podcast, the link to Isabel's article about how we got concussions so wrong, and it's at Slate, but I will post the direct link on my description. But is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners with about this, about your experience and about concussions in general? What you've learned.
Yeah. I think the one thing I would add that researchers repeatedly brought up is concussions. The reason that kind of what brought concussions into the spotlight was sports, but concussions are not just a sports thing. The majority of concussions occur because of falls and automobile accidents. And also there's likely a really heavy burden on domestic violence victims, and
Yeah.
oftentimes people who are not athletes kind of do not recognize the symptoms of concussion because we're kind of hammered with this idea that concussions are a sports-related injury. So yeah, I guess that would be the last thing that I would end on.
That's an excellent point because actually, for 2 years ago or last year, did a podcast last year, did a podcast with Dr. E. Valera of from Boston, Harvard School, but about brain injury, domestic violence of brain injury and concussion. So listen to that. And please, of course, I will again, I've said this many times, but I'll say it again, read Isabel's amazing article and learn from it and share with others and tell us about concussion, get the information out there so we don't have to. Not everyone has to sort of find out for themselves. So I have to be a great researcher like Isabel to find out that we have a connection, say, with their Slack colleagues on not Slack, their Slack colleagues, but her colleagues on Slack about and trying to find out that way how the best way, a better way to treat it. But yes, but so thank you so much, Isabel, and yes, and good luck with the. All your stuff and your, of course,
Thank
all your articles and your race, and so that's in. So put your bets in on Isabel completing the 50K race in under. Let's see, I'm gonna put that time on you now. Under
I'd like to finish,
10
I think,
hours.
under like 5.5 hours.
Oh yeah.
I'm not trying to set any speed records. I just want to run 33
I
miles,
said,
31 miles.
you run straight or do you run it or do you, where you, was it like a trail that we have like checkpoints and stuff and
Yeah,
I
there's lots of
know our
checkpoints.
friend here, runs does
Yeah.
ultramarathons and
Yeah. All right. It was really nice to meet you.
was great talking to you and
Thank you
yeah
so much for
again
having me.
great thanks a lot and thank you
All
for listening thanks for listening
right.
everyone
All right. Bye.
see ya.